The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware. Welcome to the Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark. Each week, WVUD hosts different artists to talk about the music they play and the lives they lead. Stay tuned for the Music Room on WVUD.
And good evening, everybody. It's Mando Richard here. And if all goes according to plan tonight, we will have Jeremy Daneman, Newark native Jeremy Daneman, on. This will be his third appearance on WVUD. He's got a new record out called Honey Wine, and we're hoping to get him on the line shortly. He also has daycare duties for his one-year-old. So there may possibly be something that doesn't go quite right. But you're going to love his music, and I'm hoping to get him on the line. He's really a lot of fun to talk with. Let's listen to a track from this new record. This is No Problem from Jeremy Daneman's new record, Honey Wine, here on The Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1, Newark. We'll be right back. Well, joining us on the line right now is the saxophone player you heard on that track, Jeremy Danman. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing real well. It sounds like you've had a busy day.
I did have a busy day, mostly in a good way. I started out the morning with a rehearsal with the drummer, Mike Clark, who some of your listeners might know as the drummer from Herbie Hancock's band, Headhunters.
Oh, wow.
We're getting ready for a recording session with a young guitar player named Brad Barberman, which is later this week, so that's pretty exciting. And then I had to go teach way out in Queens, and then I had to go pick up the son from daycare, and that brings us to now.
Well, you've come a long way since leaving Newark, Delaware.
That is true, but that was 1998, if you believe that.
Wow, yeah. Well, it's just we've loved chatting with you on the air. This will be the third time I've talked to you on the WVD airwaves, and you just do so much interesting music, and you've just released the CD Honey Wine, which is you and Sophie and Zaya Zenga. And
actually, it is being released on March 10th.
So excuse me.
You're all listening to this early.
Oh, my heavens. Hey, you mean we're giving our listeners a scoop?
Yeah, you're giving them a scoop, a sneak preview. This might be the first time some of this music has been on the radio at all, actually.
Uh-huh. Well, I hear somebody's excited by that.
Yeah, he likes that.
Now, this is a record you've been working on this for a long time, because I know the first time you were on the air, we played part of the title track, Honey Wine. And so I know you have, and Sophie and William Parker and Tim Kuiper have been working on this for a long time.
That's true. We started out, I don't know, this must have been starting to be planned since like 2010 or 2011.
Oh my heavens.
And then I thought I was going to get Sophie here, but her visa was declined in 2013. So I spent a couple years fundraising and preparing her visa application and stuff, and then it was declined in a wrong way by the State Department, for lack of a better way of talking about it.
Now, did you meet her when you went to Rwanda?
That's right. I should back up a little bit. I first went to Rwanda in 2009 to give street performances to commemorate the 15th anniversary of the genocide there. And I had also been interested for a few years in this instrument, the inanga, which is the national instrument of Rwanda. So then I met Sophie over there, and we started playing together. We gave a concert at the Goethe Institute over there in Kigali, which is the capital of Rwanda. And then I started plotting to bring her over here.
Well, I think what's interesting is, I mean, on this record, I think the first track, Ibiseki, she sings part of the time.
Mm-hmm.
She plays, what's the name of the instrument she plays again?
It's called inanga, and inanga, it's a very, very rare instrument. What we're saying is that, well, what we're saying and what is true is that it's an instrument so rare there isn't even a Wikipedia page about it.
And some listeners
so
gonna
when they
take
make a Wikipedia page, I'm going to have to find something else to talk about. it's a board, which is kind of meant, if you think of a shield, I think it's meant to be the shape of a shield. And one string is wrapped around it 10 times. And I think as your listeners hear, it's sort of like a lower than a guitar, but maybe a little higher than a bass.
Yeah, because on that track we just played, No Problem, she and William Parker did some really nice duets.
They're both in the same sort of area of range.
Well, he stayed below her, and she stayed above him. Yeah, some of us have experience of, you know, if the keyboard player enters where the bass player is supposed to be, going out and buying a 5-string bass to get under them.
but have you done that?
Yes, sir. I mean, no comment.
Okay.
No comment.
You're not going to tell me who the keyboard player was. So.
No. No, but that's cool. You also, I know you've told our listeners before that she's one of the very, very few women who plays this instrument, that it's a male thing there in Rwanda.
It's pretty safe to say, like, the only one, the only professional female inanga player.
Wow.
And she's even taught it. Well, she learned from her father, who was a famous inanga player named Thomas Karusu. And then she's also a teacher, and she's tried teaching it. But it seems like still, even though she's been teaching it for a while now, no more women have been picking it up.
Okay.
It's not, like, illegal to play inanga, but it's a bit of a taboo. But she's very popular there. It's not like they dislike it, you know, just for some reason they don't go there. The women don't go into it.
Now, the cover, once the CD becomes available on March 10th, is hilarious. It's you and Sophie in a subway station playing.
That's right.
You got to explain that to some of the people who aren't familiar with your work. I mean, about how the whole Parade of One thing got started, how this whole street performance thing got started, and how you ended up in a subway station.
Yeah, I'll start right from the beginning with that. So in 2009, for my birthday, I decided to have a parade instead of a party. And I took one of my saxophones and I went from Brooklyn to Queens, Queens to Manhattan, marched around Manhattan, back into Brooklyn. It was like an 11-hour parade, and it was the best birthday ever. What I learned was that I really enjoyed reaching all kinds of people with the music, and not just the types of people who go to this type of club or that type of club or this theater or that place. It was just whoever's on the street. And it sort of approaches audience in a very open and egalitarian way. So this was also around the same time as the 15th anniversary of the genocide against the Tutsi in Rwanda, which I took an interest in because my grandparents were Holocaust survivors, and, you know, many historians have noted the similarities between the two events. So I decided to go give street performances in Rwanda, and that was the start of the whole Parade of One project. And I went there, I started giving street performances. I remember very distinctly the first time I just went to a market, took out my saxophone, and all of a sudden all these people were gathered around me. And I just kept playing and playing because I realized when I stopped playing, they were going to ask me what I was doing, why I was doing this. I just kept playing. And then finally, of course, I had to stop and they said, okay, what are you doing? I was right. They wanted to know what this was all about. And I told them that I was, playing to commemorate the genocide. One of them ended up translating for me for the rest of them. And, you know, they loved the message. And that went very well in Rwanda, you know, giving street performances and meeting other musicians like Sophie, that I continued the project in Vietnam and Cambodia also. Of course, when Sophie came here, we gave a lot of street performances here, including on the subway, like you see in the photo on the album cover.
Didn't you pick up your wife by playing the saxophone out there in the street corners of Ho Chi Minh City?
That's true. I was playing saxophone in a park in Ho Chi Minh City, or what many people know as Saigon. And the person who became my wife just came up to me and started talking. And that's how I met her, playing on the street in Saigon. Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the music. I mean, your story is fascinating, and all the stuff that you've been doing, but the music is really interesting, too. You're one of two saxophonists that Bill Barnett, another WVUD personality I have talked to, who identifies a lot with folk music, the other one being Daniel Bennett, who's also up in the New York area.
Right.
It's very different. I mean, to me, it seems like your folk process is global.
Yeah. Some people might say I'm world music. I kind of say folk to be more encompassing, because folk music can be here or there or anywhere. World music, I guess, suggests outside of the U.S. and Europe or something. But it's true. I'm taking a lot of influence in my music from other parts of the world and the folk traditions from those parts of the world. In the case of this album, I was listening a lot to an Ananga player, now deceased, named Joseph Sebetunzi. I had some old grainy recordings of, and I was really listening to, like, where his rhythmic emphases are, and trying to design melodies using sort of Western scales, because I don't want to get too technical, but the Ananga is using mostly the pentatonic, a five-note scale. And, you know, in the West we have 12 notes that we use. I'm not saying one is better or worse, but I was trying to mix those two things.
I think it's really great stuff. We're going to play one more track for the folks and let you get back to taking care of your youngster there. Tell us about Angry Woman, the track that we're going to close the show with.
Sure. Angry Woman is a tune that you may notice there's a similarity in title to this Ornette Coleman song called Lonely Woman from The Shape of Jazz to Come. Well, it's one of Ornette Coleman's most distinctive melodies, probably. And I was kind of thinking in terms of making something kind of eerie like that. And then I was using the, some traditional traditional Inanga rhythms that, or rather Sophie was using some traditional Inanga rhythms that I heard from the classic Joseph Debetunzi track. Also, there's a long intro at the beginning, you may have noticed. Mm-hmm. The funny thing about that is that that was actually supposed to be at the beginning of another song. And then the rest, after we recorded it, I decided I didn't like the rest of the song, but I liked the intro. So we tacked the intro onto Angry Woman.
Well, I just think the whole record is fascinating. I think that you and William Parker and Tim Kuiper do a wonderful job of counterpoint.
And Tim Kuiper, by the way, is just left to go on tour with Salif Keita, the African superstar.
Wow, but it's so cool to hear, if you will, what the Americans do with the Rwanda rhythms throughout this record. It's really cool stuff.
Thank you very much.
Let's let you get back to the daddy daycare business. Been there, done that myself. And we're going to let the folks hear Angry Woman from Jeremy Denman and Sophie Nzeyezenga's new record, Honey Wine, which will be coming out on March 10th.
Yes, thank you very much for having me on the air again.
Jeremy.
It's always a pleasure.
It is always fun.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.